I think I have to announce that the days of the eenies, like the espresso black pepper martini, the Greenland banana martini, and the mother of them all, the cosmopolitan, well, those days are over. Now it's handmade ingredients, dizzying innovations, and at the same time, a new respect for traditional drinks like the old-fashioned. One man, Robert Simonson, the New York Times cocktail and spirits writer, has been tracking these changes. He's written A Proper Drink, the untold story of how a band of bartenders saved the civilized drinking world. Robert talked to our correspondent, Joe Yonan, food and dining editor of The Washington Post.
Hi, Robert. Thanks so much for joining us.
A pleasure to be here.
So you have written this book about so many cocktails and the stories behind them and the cocktail renaissance. But I want to start by talking to you about a cocktail that, well, everybody loves to hate, which is the Cosmopolitan.
It's a good place to start.
So how did it come about? Who invented the Cosmo?
Well, that's a difficult question to answer. You would think in our day and age where, like, everything that we do is thoroughly accounted for in a million media that we would know exactly who invented the Cosmopolitan. But for some time now, there have been at least three claimants to this drink, and people continue to argue about it to this day. I did a thorough research into the Cosmopolitan because I felt it was an important drink. It's kind of like a proto-modern classic, you know, one that preceded all the other modern classic cocktails that followed it. And I interviewed all the people who said that they had invented it, and I took a stand. I said that a man named Toby Checchini invented the Cosmopolitan in 1988 at the Odeon in New York. And this has emerged as the initial controversy coming out of the book, because there are some people who say it was invented by this woman named Cheryl Cook, who is a bartender down in Miami. But the thing is, it has to date from 1988, because that's when the Absolut Vodka Company introduced Absolut Citron the market. And you can't make the drink without Absolut Citron. That was one of the first flavored vodkas.
Right, right. Now, why do modern bartenders hate it so much?
I think there are a trio of reasons. There's a natural hatred that bartenders have for a drink that they have to make a million times. They get really sick of that. Another reason is when the modern mixology trend began in the late 90s and early aughts, one of their badges of honor was using good quality ingredients. And they wanted to use fresh juice instead of sour mix. They wanted to use good quality liquor. And the Cosmopolitan called for a couple things that they were against. One was flavored vodka, which they considered artificial. And the second was cranberry juice cocktail, which they also considered an artificial ingredient. A lot of the more principled bars in the early years would not even carry cranberry juice behind the bar, so that they had an excuse that they could give to the customers when they ordered a Cosmopolitan. They say, well, I'm sorry, we can't make that.
I mean, even the fact that it's based on vodka is probably a problem for a lot of them, right?
Yes, in the early years, vodka was the enemy. You have to remember that vodka is the number one spirit in America. More people drink vodka than anything else. That's still true today, and it certainly was true in the 80s and 90s. These bartenders were trying to get customers to broaden their palate, you know, try some bourbon, try some rye, tequila, mezcal, these other things that were out there.
Well, another vodka drink that you write about in the book that has an interesting story is the vodka espresso, which some of us think of as an espresso martini.
Almost everyone calls it an espresso martini.
Right. I'm not sure I've ever had a good one.
And that is a drink you can get all over the world. It's fresh espresso and vodka and coffee liqueur. That was invented by a guy named Dick Bradsell, who was the leader of the London cocktail revival. He was the guy that inspired everybody. He trained hundreds of bartenders. And he invented this cocktail in the 80s, and he worked in a lot of private clubs that were frequented by celebrities, including supermodels. And this drink was created on the request of a supermodel. He's never identified who. Some people speculated it was Kate Moss, but I mean, she would have been 13 at the time, but you never, who knows?
I'm going with Linda Evangelista.
Oh, that's a good choice. And the model said she wanted a drink that would first wake her up and then screw her up, although she didn't use those exact words. That's what Dick Bradsell came up with.
Robert, one of the things that these bartenders have done, of course, is reintroduce us to some lost cocktails. Yes. And some of them have become pretty popular. Like one of my favorites is an Aviation. Gin, lemon, maraschino, creme de violette.
Yes.
That was a pre-prohibition gin drink, right? How did it come to be revived and how did it get to be kind of hip?
Yeah, the Aviation was one of the early poster child cocktails of the mixology movement. There were a few of these. That drink was known, but it wasn't completely understood until somebody uncovered a cocktail book that was published right before Prohibition that included a recipe for the Aviation, and it had that critical ingredient, that missing ingredient, the creme de violette, which gives the drink a kind of a purple hue. Now, that's a gin cocktail, and in the early days of the mixology movement, you know, they were trying to get everyone to drink gin instead of vodka. So that's one of the reasons why it started appearing on a lot of menus, and bartenders started pushing it, and it became a trendy drink. And now I think it's kind of safely thought of as a classic. If you go into a good bar, you can order it and be safe in the idea that the bartender knows how to make it.
Well, one thing that struck me as I was reading about all the drinks that spread from bartender to bartender and bar to bar and the conflicting accounts of who invented them was none of them seem to be considered the property of those bartenders. So I suppose there's no copywriting a cocktail?
No, you cannot copyright a recipe.
Right. It seems like the inventors of the drinks don't seem to be all that proprietary about them either. Is it just camaraderie in the bartending world?
They are proprietary. They want to be credited correctly. If you created the cocktail and the cocktail appears on another menu somewhere else, you know, it's supposed to be common courtesy that you put the name of the bartender under it so people know where that drink came from. But they are very good at sharing the recipes. I think they've learned their lessons from the past. There was a whole section of the cocktail history, the tiki movement, that because the bartenders kept their recipes secret, almost all those recipes were almost lost. You know, and like, there's a historian named Jeff Berry, and he had to dig and dig and dig for years to find out how to properly make a zombie because nobody knew anymore. So the bartenders today are very good at sharing cocktails. If I was a bartender and I went into a bar and I tasted this great drink, this is fantastic, I would just go to the bartender and say, I would love to put this on my menu. I'll give you credit. Do you mind sharing the recipe? And I'm sure they would. I've never heard that they don't.
Robert, thank you so much for talking to us about this. It's fascinating stuff.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Robert Simonson is author of A Proper Drink. Joe Yonan's latest book is Eat Your Vegetables, Bold Recipes for the Single Cook. Now, head to splendidtable.org to browse through our cocktail recipes, including two from Robert Simonson's book, An Aviation and the classic Suffering Bastard. It's all there at splendidtable.org.